of course, we focus on first responders, but you know, we get a lot of great feedback from the spouses that attend as well. At the end of the day, stress is stress and trauma is trauma. And no matter who you are, when you come to the conference, you're going to learn something, whether you're a spouse, fire, police, EMS, corrections. We have a lot of dispatchers, clinicians. Sometimes we have nurses. I always say at the beginning of the conference, keep an open mind. Just because a police officer is up here doesn't mean that you, and you're a firefighter, doesn't mean that you can't learn from them, right? It's not a one size fits all. Here's different resources and tools. Look into them. I feel like we're moving in the right direction as far as wellness goes, but I still think that we have a long way to go.
Welcome to Responder Resilience, along with my co-host Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Shawn Thomas. She's the founder of First Responder Conferences, about providing education, mental health tools, and resources for agencies, first responders, and their families. We'll also be bringing you a new installment of Resilience Toolbox with Jane Baker. She's the president of Momentum Lifestyle Consulting. We'll be spotlighting gut health, digestive wellness, pH balance for the body, and lowering inflammation for first responders. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Shawn after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMTB.
Today we're joined by Shawn Thomas. She's the founder of First Responder Conferences. Shawn is a retired deputy from the King County Sheriff's Office in Seattle, Washington. And during her career, she worked patrol as an undercover detective, a detective in the warrant unit, transit patrol, and as an explosive K-9 handler. She was also on the peer support team for 16 years and retired in 2022 after 25 years of service as a wellness and resiliency detective and a therapy K-9 handler. Shawn, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Responder Resilience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome. Your resume is impressive, so we can't wait to start asking questions. Let's jump right in. So David read what your exposure was and your career. I'm wondering really what you learned in those roles that made you so aware of the broad, widespread problem we're seeing in first responder culture.
You know, I joined the peer support team in 2006. And so that was really kind of my first awakening of what was happening, the critical incidents that people were going to, and then as a peer supporter, trying to help those people. But then really until we had a personal family situation is when I took a deep dive into wellness. So not only on the job and the things that I did on the job and experience, but it was also personally within the family that made me recognize there's a lot of first responders suffering in silence.
That's a common thread that we have with guests that we interview or first responders that we help in our peer-to-peer group. Can you talk a little bit about how, when you retired or how you started to look at first responder conferences, how did that come into play?
Well, it goes way back. like I said, I was on peer support since 2006. But really in 2015, my husband had been on the SWAT team for about 18 years, on the department for about 27 at that point. was undergoing organizational stress, and as well as cumulative stress that, you know, he hadn't processed through, and was coping with alcohol, to the point where he didn't feel well. And so he said, "Hey, you know, I don't feel well. I need help." And I said, "Okay, now what? You know, what do we do? We didn't feel comfortable reaching out to our department asking for help. So we searched and found a confidential resource. He got the help that he needed. But during that whole process, I realized that we're both first responders and we don't know where to get help. There's got to be several other people out there. So my peer support captain at the time knew about what we had been through and suggested that we put on a mental health and wellness conference for first responders and their families. And I thought, well, sure, how hard can a conference be? And then realized it was a lot of work being on that event, but we had around 150 people attend, 150 first responders attend, and at least five people after the conference reached out for help. So that's really when I realized that there's a lot of first responders suffering in silence, like I said before, and that my department really didn't have any proactive wellness programs at the time. I mean, we had peer support, but it was more reactive than proactive. And so I started talking to other first responders around the country and found this to be true with almost everybody I was talking to. So I had some first responder friends from different states. You know, they knew that I had done this conference and they liked the idea of it and asked me if I could do a conference in their area. So I just try to work with the local boots on the ground folks to make those conferences happen, because every time we had a conference, people were saying how, you know, it was beneficial. I had people call me and telling me that it saved their life. And so therefore I became really passionate about it. I knew I had to keep on moving forward when asked by agencies or individuals. So now we're just getting ready to have our 40th conference since 2016.
Wow.
So it was supposed to be a one and done, but it organically grew, which I'm super happy about, because obviously people are wanting to make wellness a priority, agencies, organizations, and, you know, we like to make that happen when asked.
I was fortunate to attend your conference earlier this year in Orlando, and I was saying earlier that having attended a lot of conferences over the years, I just found it flowed really nicely. You never felt like you were looking at your watch wondering, you know, is it time to go home? You had great speakers, great vendors, and logistically, you had the vendors in the room with the speakers. I'd love to come back to that. But I met so many amazing people at that conference, several of whom have been guests on this show now, that, you know, clearly you're attracting high quality speakers. And I think that's key, because we need obviously culturally competent speakers, but also ones that are maybe on the cutting edge of the information that first responders need to hear, right? There's a lot of stuff that we may have heard over the years, but things are evolving constantly. So what's your process? Like, how do you find the speakers, and do you have a goal or some kind of vision of what you want them to be presenting during the conference?
Well, so we have an online speaker form. So I encourage people, if they're interested in speaking, to fill that out. But when they do fill that out, I have conversations with them to see if, you know, I feel like their presentation is a good fit for our conferences. We have, one of the things that we try to do is we try to keep costs low. And so we have local speakers and we have national speakers. And every time we go to a location, we ask the co-host, "Hey, do you have any recommendations?" If they have our recommendations, then we try to, you know, put those people into the schedule. And then what we don't have as far as local speakers, then I go to my national list and I look at all my national speakers to see where I can fill in the blanks. So that's kind of how that process works.
Do you feel like you have to do a lot of soliciting, or is it that a lot of people reach out to you because they want to get involved and it kind of flows easily for you?
No, I think there's a lot of passionate people out there that just want to share their information. And so we don't have to, I mean, we have a newsletter, a weekly newsletter that we push out every week and say, you know, call for speakers if you're interested. But really, I don't think that's where most of the speakers come from. I think it's just over time, like at conferences, because we always say, hey, if you're interested, you know, please fill out the speaker form. So we get speakers that way. We get speakers that just are doing a Google search. We get recommendations from other speakers or other people that have been to the conference. You know, we attend some other wellness events. So just, we could really have probably a year long conference with all the speakers that we have. But we, you know, we try to balance out the schedule and, you know, add as many speakers and topics and different professions, because our conferences are for all first responders and we don't do breakout sessions. So it's basically 8 to 10 speakers, at a conference. So I really try to balance out the schedule and, you know, put as many topics as possible into the 2 days.
This episode is made possible by Momentum Lifestyle Consulting, empowering first responders to achieve a balanced lifestyle by connecting the science of proper nutrition through wellness programs and supplements to improve gut health, digestion, sleep, and cellular health.
One of our colleagues committed suicide, and I was the first one on the scene and walking through the door of the hotel room.
It was a motor vehicle accident, people trapped, people on fire, human running down the street on fire.
I witnessed a patient who was assaulted with a baseball bat. And I remember opening the front door and hearing a police officer screaming, "It's bad."
One of the things I loved about it was that it wasn't just a law enforcement focused conference or fire focused conference. My favorite speakers, I think, were more from the law enforcement end. And as a former firefighter, I'm constantly wanting to learn more about the culture of law enforcement because I'm pretty familiar with EMS and fire. So the fact that you have all those different disciplines in one conference, I think, is great because it gives us all like an awareness of what the rest of the professions are going through.
Well, and we didn't want to segregate against professions, right? Because at the end of the day, stress is stress and trauma is trauma. And no matter who you are, when you come to the conference, you're going to learn something, whether you're a spouse, fire, police, EMS, corrections. We have a lot of dispatchers, clinicians. We, you know, sometimes we have nurses. You know, so it's really open to everyone. Of course, we focus on first responders, but, you know, we get a lot of great feedback from the spouses that attend as well. Because the spouses really aren't included in training. And so when you get hired and you go through the academy, they say, oh, great, you know, we're one big happy family. And then what? Nobody ever sent me as a spouse anything home saying, hey, come join this training or find out about your first responder or, hey, do you need therapy? Like, I mean, you know, these are things that we act like we include the families, but we really don't do a very good job of it. And so we encourage spouses to register with their first responder.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great because there's a lot of assumptions that get made by each branch about what the other branches are about and what their goals are. And I think to take it down to the level that you are and that we try to do on the podcast as well is so that we can all learn better what each branch faces. And although there are nuances, the main hot button issues are the same. And so I know a lot of first responders see each other very differently, but I think the more you delve into these issues and topics, the more you realize everyone's facing the same thing, just in a different place and maybe a different way to a different severity.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, I always say at the beginning of the conference, keep an open mind. Just because a police officer is up here doesn't mean that you, and you're a firefighter, doesn't mean that you can learn, you can't learn from them, right? Right. Or a spouse or a dispatcher. I mean, yes, their job is a little bit different, but at the end of the day, they're enduring the same stress, the same trauma that, you know, it's nobody's different.
And another thing that I think sets your conference apart is that they're not getting up there and doing like a rote PowerPoint presentation, just kind of factual. A number of the speakers that I heard went deep into some raw, very personal challenges they experienced that they were able to overcome, but they really didn't, they pulled back the curtain and let us, you know, share some pretty deep stuff with the rest of the audience. And I thought that was, that's the kind of thing that's going to touch somebody. And, you know, if they need help, maybe it's going to say, you know, I can relate to that and maybe I can overcome this, but if I find the right help. Does that happen in most of the conferences?
Yeah, we always have first responders that are sharing their personal story as well as their post-traumatic growth, right? So not hey, this is what happened to me, the end, right? This is what happened to me and this is what I did about it and this is how I got here. I think that's super important. And we all know it's not a one-size-fits-all. So different people sharing different stories. And again, like I said, their post-traumatic growth, I mean, there's a different road for everyone. And that's really something that we want people to open their mind to is it's not a one-size-fits-all. Please, you know, here's different resources and tools. Look into them, right? Don't just get stuck into the, well, I need to go to therapy. And if therapy doesn't work, I don't know what else to do, right? We know that there's different types of things, meditation, yoga, you know, light therapy, flow therapy. I mean, so many different tools to help, but you got to keep on, you know, searching and finding the one that works for you and don't give up.
Well, I think in our first responder culture, often we're taught A plus B equals C. Yes, we do a lot of thinking outside of the box and on our toes and the scenes change and we have to as well. But in terms of the therapeutic aspect, I think in the last few years, it's started to change and that people notice it's not just one thing that's going to help you get better. Often it's several working all together. And there might be a time period in which you rely heavier on your therapy, and there might be a time period in which you rely heavier on your exercise routine. And these things are in flux and they change. So I like the idea of at your conferences exposing people to many topics, which is what we try to do on the podcast as well, because what works for David might not work for me. And I think the more that we're all on the same page and getting that word out, we can change that mindset that we're all used to dealing with that's quite rigid at times. To really get people to understand they can do their own combination.
Yeah, 100%. You're exactly right. And that's why we like to include the different, you know, whether it's therapy modalities or, like I said, yoga or meditation or, you know, just, I mean, there's so many different things out there. And you're correct. I mean, you know, there's times in my life where therapy was what I was focused on.
Right.
But then now the treadmill and Netflix is one of my self-care coping mechanisms, right? So it's, you know, it just sounds so simple, but that's, you know, where I can be in my own mind and work out some things in my life. And we all need to know that it doesn't just end, right? Mm-hmm. You got to keep on doing something.
This episode is made possible by Momentum Lifestyle Consulting, empowering first responders to achieve a balanced lifestyle by connecting the science of proper nutrition through wellness programs and supplements to improve gut health, digestion, sleep, and cellular health.
We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Sean Thomas after this new installment of Resilience Toolbox. On this installment of Resilience Toolbox, we're speaking with Jane Baker, CNHP, and she's the president of Momentum Lifestyle Consulting. we'll be spotlighting gut health, digestive wellness, pH balancing the body, and lowering inflammation for first responders. Jane's a certified natural health professional specializing in gut health and digestive wellness. Since 2011, she's worked with various first responders around the nation utilizing science-based methods to help reduce the statistics around cardiovascular disease and inflammation in the body. Momentum Lifestyle Consulting is also a proud partner of First Responder Conferences in an effort to expand their reach to as many as possible.
You know, growing up in a family of first responders, you know, my dad retired from the federal law enforcement. My aunt was the captain of a men's maximum security prison. And I saw firsthand what that lifestyle did to them, not just about the PTSD, but their diet choices were awful. They were eating on the go. They ended up gaining a lot of weight. They weren't healthy. So one of the things that we like to do is provide simple solutions that are evidence-based, but they don't take a lot of work to do. So putting an enzyme in their diet every day with everything they eat that's not raw is step number one. Sleep support. We have a partner called Healthy Cell, and we provide the REM sleep gel because we know that if you're not sleeping good, that's the first problem. If you're not getting your restful sleep at night, you're not going to be going into your reparative mode, and your body's going to load up on toxins.
Why is digestion so important to overall health?
So digestion actually begins in the mouth, and a lot of people don't realize that, but we have saliva-containing enzymes, but we have to chew our food down to the consistency of cake batter to allow those enzymes to work. So when we don't do that, and then we maybe take a drink of something with our food, we wash away the hydrochloric acid, which would help with digestion even more. So then we're creating an environment where the food actually can't be broken down. So what enzymes do, they're the building block of life. And if we put an enzyme in with everything that we eat, we're giving our body an optimal chance to actually break apart the nutrients and deliver them to the cells.
pH balance, that's something that probably our medics and EMTs would be familiar with. In terms of nutrition, why is pH balance so important to the body?
So pH obviously just stands for potential of hydrogen. And the way I try to describe it to people is it's called the acid-alkaline balance. But essentially, and I talk with my hands, there's a conveyor belt, right? So your body's going along at a speed of life. If you're over here eating a lot of red meat, alcohol, you have a lot of stress in your life, animal proteins, things like that, you're gonna have a more acidic-based environment. And cancer and disease thrive in that environment. They love it. When we move over to the more alkaline side, your body has a better chance for wellness because for every point you move up on that pH scale, you have 100 times more oxygen available to your cells. And when you use a pH test kit, you put the litmus paper in your mouth and you check it within 5 seconds. If it comes up yellow, you're acidic. If it comes up blue, you're too alkaline. But if it comes up green, that means you're right in the middle.
What kind of steps can people take today to get their body back in balance?
You can start by checking your pH balance and eating a more alkaline diet. So one of the things that we do is we provide food lists for people, and it's something that's on our social media as well.
Jane, talk a little bit about your work with first responders, some of the services and products you offer.
So one of the things that we like to do is provide simple solutions for first responders that they don't really need to think a lot about. Things, you know, they have a busy life. We want to just give them something that they know is going to work. So we have a lifestyle subscription that is our enzyme, our pH test kit, and it's a sleep support called REM Sleep from one of our partners, Healthy Cell. We also offer free 15-minute consultations with anybody that wants to give us a call and talk with us. We do intensive 6-week in-depth profiles. So if somebody wants to come on and have a little bit more hand-holding and really make a change, that's where they're going to come in, fill out our questionnaire, and they're going to get about 6 pages of information back. And it's a plan that's built specifically for them and their lifestyle.
Jane, how can people find more information about you and your organization?
So they can visit us online at thelifestylesubscription.com, and we are always offering free consultations. Call us for 15 minutes. They can find us online at Break Your Inertia, which is our Instagram and our Facebook page as well. We offer 15% off for our first responders, and they have a discount code, which I think we have here that we've shared with you guys today. And it's important for me to mention that a portion of every dollar that comes into our company is donated back to helping the homeless, which is a very near and dear cause to my heart, as well as any first responders in need.
Jane, thank you for joining us today on Resilience Toolbox and for sharing this important information. We wish you continued success.
Thank you so much again for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
I don't know if you have found this, but David and Stacy and I have been quite humbled at times to really learn there are more people in first responder world than we really think of. animal control, the last investigators, the death investigators, which we've focused a bit on. So I think they're all of the ones that we are aware of, but then there are others. So what we're trying to do and what you're trying to do is raise the spotlight, shine it on those other pieces of the profession that people don't think of as quickly as they do the main three or four.
Yeah. When we first had this one and done conference, I was like, okay, well, what am I going to call it? Right. First responder conferences. Oh, that seems like it, you know, just fits for this thing, but it's like you said, a lot bigger than that. So, sometimes I regret saying first responder, because it is, you know, dispatchers sometimes will say, well, I'm not a first responder. I'm like, yes, I understand. Well, you are, because you're the, like, it's a phone call. But so that's why, you know, when we open these conferences up to people, we try to like say everyone. But you know, we do list like professions and things like that. But again, mm-hmm. it's open to anybody that wants to attend.
Another topic that I heard in my conference was financial, right? That's something else that I think it's overlooked so much in all the career tracks. And you had Nick Doherty, who's, you know, he's a rock star with what he speaks about, Nick, aka the financial cop. Now, that was such a powerful thing to add in terms of the content and the importance in any first responder's career. So it's not like you're just presenting entirely about, say, mental health or substance abuse, right? Do you have other things like that, that you have speakers presenting on?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because we get people that are like, what does financial stuff have to do with wellness? And I'm like, seriously, like, how are you missing the boat? Why? I mean, how does it not, right? If you're not financially stable, then, I mean, look at all the first responders that work overtime just to live outside their means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I think that's one of the things that as a department, people don't look at like, okay, well, why is so-and-so working so much overtime? I get it, right? If you buy a new car and you don't want to have a car payment and you're trying to pay it off, that's one thing. But if you, we all know those people that work a ton of overtime, and why are they working all that overtime? I mean, do they not want to go home? Is it, you know, issues at home? Are they gambling a lot? You know, what is it? And so of course, you know, I think the department really has to do a better job of looking into, okay, well, you have all this overtime and we're gonna, you know, cap the overtime that you can work, but still, are we ever getting to the core? Right.
I think you're making a good point, and it makes me think that in some ways, we're not helping first responders, right? Because if they can work and work and work to the bone, and they can go buy their toys, their timeshare, their boat, their quads, whatever, and we've all seen this, right? Where people accumulate a lot of things. But what are we ultimately teaching? And what are we allowing for?
Yeah.
So I think need to be some cultural changes in how the finances are viewed that way. But then also in terms of retirement and how can we teach first responders to be more fiscally responsible, live within their means?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we hear those stories too, right? Like, why isn't so-and-so retired? I mean, they're at a certain age and now they're losing more money. I mean, is it because really they have nothing else to do and that's, they love the job? Okay. That's one thing, but yeah, there's a lot of things that as a department, you know, they can look into to maybe try to help people. But of course, everybody's busy and they just go on their way and think, well, you know, we gave them a job and self-care is their own thing, right? They need to, you know, figure it out themselves. They're adults. So, you know, which I mean, yes, they are. But I feel like we're moving in the right direction as far as wellness goes. But I still think that we have a long way to go. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do. There's still agencies that don't have peer support, right? And the other thing that I like to bring up too is there are a lot of volunteer departments.
Yes.
what are the volunteer departments doing for the volunteers? Because they're volunteering to do this job, which I did. I was a reserve when I first started, right? So, but what are they doing for the volunteers? You know, they should be doing something and offering something to those folks as well. And as a fire department, right, there's a lot of volunteer fire departments. So, I don't know. I think, like I said, we're moving in the right direction, but we still have a ways to go to make sure we're taking care of these people so they can take care of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And by proxy, the families, right? You touched on that with the financial piece, that families are affected, you know, dramatically by their loved one working overtime, by the, you know, the PTS that their loved one is going through. And, you know, departments, I guess I'm going to make a generalization here, that they're happy to fill those overtime slots. But the, you know, the ripple effect on the family who's not seeing their spouse or father or mother for extended periods of time because they're working so much. Those are tough challenges that are not usually looked at. And I love the fact that you include spouses in the conference and that's part of the picture.
Yeah. I think it's great because we're starting to see more of that as well on our end, including spouses, not only in conferences, but retreats. And this notion, I think a lot of people feel, well, she or he knew what they were getting into when they married me. But did they really? Did they really know they were marrying this profession that would take over their life and have them have radios on in the middle of the night and the multitude of things, or even just living through COVID as a first responder, you know, seeing their family member go out and how are they coming back and are they bringing something back to us? So I think that we've just started to scratch the surface of the implications on spouses, family members, children. I think the children right now we're doing the least for. So I'm looking forward to opening that topic more and seeing more of that in conferences and just in general literature that we're all following.
Yeah, I agree. Somebody contacted me the other day, you know, wanting to do a presentation about children, right? Mm-hmm. Because I know that both my husband and I being in law enforcement, I mean, we probably screwed our kids up. But you know, we didn't know. You know, I mean, it's just like, we didn't candy coat things for our kids because in one way we wanted our kids to know it's not nice out there all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. Of course we didn't talk about everything, but as the kids grew up, conversations changed. And, so, you know, I'm thankful that we have great kids. I would be interested now probably to ask them like, hey, did any of this affect you? They probably right now would say no, but, but I'm sure some things did. And I'm sure like, you know, maybe a little, but maybe my husband being a little cynical, you know, rubbed off on him, you know? So, I mean, there's those things that, yes, it's important. And, I think that of course, you know, we try to shelter them a little bit as far as, you know, what happens with the job, but, you know, how do you not?
Yeah. See, I think it's inevitable.
Right.
And hopefully they get some good stuff out of it too. I was laughing. My daughter was telling me recently, you know, because of you, Dad, you know, I always have to have like a fire extinguisher, check my smoke detectors, make sure I got, you know, a first aid kit and even one for my dog. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like I know, you know, I probably exposed her to some things that weren't positive, but she, you know, she took that away and I'll, you know, I'll take that. I'd rather she was like sort of had a safety consciousness than not. But yeah,
I view it the same way, David. It's a blessing and a curse, right? Yeah. I think every day we're transferring these micro traumas to them. We take something we saw on a call and say, "You're never going anywhere with no helmet," right? And we become the helmet police. Or I think we do it in so many ways. Even when we're trying to shield them and we're trying to hide it, they see us at a concert looking for egress and telling them when everybody leaves, you stay on the outside, you don't get in the middle of the crowd. I mean, all the things that we've learned from the scenes we've been on, even when we're trying not to tell them, we are. And we're doing it in our body language and what they're observing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. Because we always had to stay in the back row at the movie theater. You know, I mean, they got to the point where they didn't ask anymore. You know, they just knew that, okay, this is the way it is. And this is, and you know, why does my mom have a gun in her purse all the time?
Well, right.
Because we're not going anywhere without it. That's why, you know, so it's just, I mean, you know, now my kids, you know, they're 18 and 19 and they always have a knife in their pocket. Right. And dad always had a knife in their pocket. They are, you know, so, yeah, it's, you know, we want our kids to be prepared. So just like the fire extinguisher.
Sure.
Really powerful stuff, I think, for police organizations to understand. We don't have to tear everything down. And if we focus on the most important job, the most important position is the chief of police, and we get that hire right, everything else takes care of itself. It really does. Organizational culture. I think if we change that, matter of fact, I know we change that, we're going to see cops come back. We're absolutely going to see cops come back. We're not going to have people, good people left to do this job as hard as it is when we now create cultures where we don't even value them or we don't appreciate them. Hopefully a lot of leaders that read this book and say, you know what? I need to get into therapy. I need to talk to somebody. I need to get a coach. I need to freaking figure out who I am. I just hope that happens because you'd be welcome to join the club because we're all in this thing together.
Let's talk more about the vendors because they're really an integral part of the conference. They're not like outside in a separate room where they may or may not interact with the attendees. Who are some, or just speak generally about your vendors and how they play a role in the conference?
Okay, well, we like to call them resource partners. Vendors just sounds not right to me. I mean, I understand, like, you know, so exhibitors or resource partners, we call them resource partners. And the reason why we call them resource partners is because that's what they are. They are a resource for our first responders. So our conference is 2 days. Like I said before, we bring in 8 to 10 speakers all in one big ballroom. And so our resource partners sit on the outer perimeter inside the room with us. The reason why we do that is we want our first responders to be exposed to these resources in case them or their families or their coworkers need help. They know what resources are out there. But the other reason why we make sure our resource partners are inside is because we want them to understand what's going on in the first responder world, especially if they're local, you know, what's going on in that area. And then the other thing is we want to educate them as well. I mean, to let them know what first responders are going through. They may be, you know, a treatment center that has a first responder track. Okay, well, that's great. But things are always changing. And you know, we want them to hear these stories, not just see somebody in treatment and not understand what it is that they endure day in and day out. So I think by having the resources in the room, it allows them to understand what's going on, and not only in the first responder world, but in their lives as well. So we just love having them inside the room to be a part of the conference, and we get great feedback from our resource partners.
I think it's so smart. You know, the more people we can talk to and have them hear the mission, the better. And maybe they go out to their agencies when they do their sales pitch and they mention your conference or they mention something that they were enlightened by. So you can't measure how these connections really make a difference in the world, right? There's no way to truly tell on the back end, but I think the fact that you're giving it that chance is really wonderful. And I hope that people listening, I hope they'd be encouraged to do the same thing at events that they run.
Yeah, I think that's why we get a lot of returning resource partners. And, you know, although our conferences are smaller, anywhere from 150 to just over 300 people, They're exposed to all those people, right? They're not just lost in the hallway that nobody ever pays attention to them. I mean, we really encourage throughout the conference to visit the resource partners around the room to make sure, like I said, that they know what resources are either local or national. And it's not just for them, right? It can be for their families and and other people as well, or the community that they serve.
Right. You know, take home to their department, or in our case, you know, share other speakers on the podcast and the vendor, I'm sorry, the resource partners. So what, just give us an idea, like where you're going to be having the conferences in the next 6 to 12 months.
So, well, I mean, for anybody that's interested, we do have our national flyer on our website, which is www.1strc.org. So they can always look to see what our future conferences or where we're going. But in October, we're in San Antonio. In November, we're in Seattle, SeaTac, Washington. In December, we're in Layton, Utah. January, we're in Tempe, Arizona. February, we're in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. March, beginning of March, we're in El Paso, Texas. End of March, we're in Ocean City, Maryland. And in April, we are in San Luis Obispo, California. So that takes us up to April. We have other conferences scheduled after that. But those are the ones that we're gearing up for.
I'm hoping we can get one in the Northeast someday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that we will go anywhere as long as we have, I mean, we don't ever contact people saying, hey, do you want to have a conference? It takes a lot of work to put one of these conferences on, and we're putting on a conference a month. So, we really want to have the conferences in areas where people are wanting to make wellness a priority, but without the local boots on the ground folks helping, there's no way we can do these conferences. So if people are interested, we're more than willing to make it happen. We just need those people that take the lead.
Okay. That's all we need, right, David?
Yeah. So
that, we'll take the hint.
Is that typically a department or an agency that like a bigger agency?
Well, so we do have, we have co-hosts that are agencies or departments. Sometimes we have co-hosts that are nonprofit organizations or organizations that are making wellness a priority, but we definitely need like departments endorsing the conference, just especially if we haven't been to an area, to give it some credibility so people aren't like, well, who are these people? You know, we try to work with as many first responders in the area as possible, again, because we're not from there. And so they're the ones that know who to contact, who to push the information out to make aware of the conference in that area. I mean, we do get people that will travel, but most of the conferences are local. And the nice thing about that is the department doesn't have to send 20 people to, you know, Washington State when they live in Florida to go to a conference. We're willing to make it happen in your area to make it more affordable for them.
I think that's great. So I see our gears turning as usual, David.
Yeah. Sean, anything else you wanted to share that we haven't talked about, or any new upcoming projects or events?
Not really. I just, you know, I want to make sure that people know that each conference is a little different because of the local and national speakers and resources. But, you know, you know, everyone again is invited to come to the conferences. I hope that somebody out there listening can make one of our conferences. And I know that they're beneficial and we're always trying to improve them. I mean, you know, I never want to waste anybody's time. So we try to do the best that we can. Our organization is small. It's really just Amanda, who is in Boise, Idaho, and Nicole, who's in Twin Falls, Idaho, that help with these conferences. And the rest of our folks you know, I mean, we have a lot of volunteers that are helping. So without them, there's no way that we would be able to do these conferences. But I think everybody in our organization has a strong why as to why we do this and very passionate about, wellness. And so if people are interested in either speaking to go online and fill out the speaker form, if they're interested in volunteering, to fill out our online volunteer form. And other than that, yeah, I, you know, we love what we're doing. And so we hope that people can be a part of it.
Share with us one more time. How can people find you on the internet or social media?
So we do have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have Instagram. But if they go to the website, www.1strc.org is how they can find us the best way.
Okay.
Well, this is very impressive, Sean. It's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for what you're doing and look forward to seeing you in the future.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Well, thanks, John. We look forward to seeing you at another conference sometime in the next, hopefully, 6 to 12 months.
Yes, we want to see you.
Remember to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and our website is respondertv.com for past episodes and guest information. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.